Okay, hopefully everybody made their fluid adjustments as necessary. And what we're going to do is, I'm just going to remind you like I did when we first started. I think we might have some newcomers and we've lost a few people, as is the case at this stage in the afternoon. Just to make sure that you are sitting with a few other people. This is the interactive portion of the afternoon. So a lot less of us speaking up here. Well, it's been pretty interactive already with the panel discussion, and we thank our panel first and foremost again, and then just all of your engagement and asking some really great questions. And so what we're going to do now is get into an opportunity to reflect on what we've already started discussing through the panel conversation and relating it to your own practice. And so what we're going to do is we're going to start by showing a video that is integrated into the small group learning sessions that are under development, and this is the foundation session. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, when we talk about team-based care, it's really important to get everybody on the same page and really having this understanding of what we're talking about when we're talking about team-based care, because we may think we're practicing as a team, but are we truly integrating the care we provide so it provides better patient care, not just different patient care or patient care delivered by more people? And so what we're going to do is we're going to go through this video that gives us a bit of an overview in terms of the definition and the competencies and some of the evidence around team-based care. And I have no control over this, so hopefully this is going to work. Technically speaking, I have utmost confidence that it will. There's some pause points in the video where we're just going to pause for sort of a minute at each. So we'll get you to jump right into the conversations at your table to answer the questions at the pause points. And then after a minute, we'll start the video again, listen to another part, and then there'll be four different pauses that sort of get you to start thinking about the concepts and principles presented in the video and how they might relate to your practice. So I'll ask that we start the video now.
The objective of this short video is to provide a general overview of team-based care, why it is important, what it is, the evidence, and how we do it. We know that when caring for patients with multiple chronic illnesses, healthcare providers often find themselves saying, "I can't do this alone." We need to change the way we deliver healthcare in response to the challenges we are currently facing across healthcare. Patients with multiple chronic illnesses, an aging population, and high patient and provider expectations are all influencing the way we provide care. We know patients are expecting improved access, continuity, and coordination of services. Providers are expecting more support. In addition, recruitment and retention, provider burnout, patient safety issues, and escalating costs are impacting our ability to provide optimal patient care. Increasing the number of healthcare providers is not enough to address these challenges. According to Health Canada, our ability to provide access to high-quality, effective, patient-centered, and safe health services depends on the right mix of healthcare providers with the right skills in the right place at the right time. Team-based care is a vision for the future of healthcare. It has been identified as a way to deliver better patient-centered care and better health outcomes. Governments are increasingly recognizing the foundational role of primary care within the healthcare system and are recognizing team-based care as a way to effectively support a wide range of services. New models of primary care in British Columbia have team-based care as a key component. Current efforts to improve our healthcare system are consistent with the 2002 Romanow Report recommendation to transform our healthcare system from one in which a multitude of participants working in silos focus primarily on managing illness to one in which they work collaboratively to deliver a seamless, integrated array of services to Canadians. From prevention and promotion to primary, hospital, community, mental health, home, and end-of-life care.
Okay, so if we can just pause the video there. So we talked a little bit about this during the panel discussion and started to hear from each other, but I just want to use this as an opportunity for you to start to kind of talk at your tables, and we've got a few questions that'll kind of build. So this is just take a minute and talk about what you've heard about team-based care and how it's being used by you or your colleagues. So we'll just take a quick minute to start that conversation, and then we'll kind of go into the next piece. Okay, so we'll start the next part of the video just in interest of time.
The definition of team-based care provided by Health Canada highlights the importance of common goals, providing better care for patients, collaborative decision-making, and more creative solutions to patient problems. It can be delivered by a formal team or a network of healthcare providers. These providers might be located in the same place or linked virtually across different practice sites. What the team looks like is based on the fact that they are brought together to meet the needs of specific patients and communities.
Okay, so with this definition in mind, what does team-based care in a primary care setting look like to you? Okay, so we'll just move on to the next piece.
There is a large body of literature that speaks to the need for team-based care, as well as to its benefits. Evidence shows that it results in better health outcomes for your patients, improved access to services, more efficient use of resources to better support you, and better satisfaction for both you and your patients. Patients benefit from enhanced access to care and services with a consistent care team. When cared for by a team, people experience improved quality, safety, and reliability of care, as well as enhanced health outcomes. Healthcare providers who work as a team reduce duplication and improve prevention and health promotion. Patients are also more satisfied when cared for by a team and engage in self-management. Many providers are working to implement team-based approaches to their practice. This is helping them spend more time doing what they were trained to do and what they enjoy, resulting in increased job satisfaction and reduced burnout. Team-based models of care also have the potential to improve the healthcare system as a whole. They improve retention and reduce absenteeism and turnover. Organizations may experience improved efficiency and effectiveness and improved patient care. Emergency room visits go down and costs lower in the long run.
Okay, so what are the main benefits for you from your perspective? 30 seconds, go. Okay.
There is no one model for team-based care. However, there are certain key enablers: flexibility in the model, flexible remuneration models, communication processes, information management, and continuing professional development support implementation of team-based models of care. The Canadian Interprofessional Health Collaborative identifies 6 core competencies necessary for effective team-based care. The framework also highlights how complexity, context, and quality improvement impact what team-based care looks like. This framework is being presented as a way to show the foundations used to ground the learning that supports team-based care. The context of care is integral to what team-based care looks like. This will vary based on availability of specific professions in specific contexts, for example, rural versus urban settings, and also on the expertise of different professions in specific contexts. The concept of complexity of care is key in determining the composition of a team. For example, a recreational runner with a sprained ankle may only need to see one or two healthcare providers. A sprained ankle for a key member of the national soccer team can have a significant impact on the person's life and will likely require a team of healthcare providers. A sprained ankle for a single mother with an infant and a toddler who also has multiple health concerns and limited social support while living in a third-floor apartment with no elevator is considerably more complex. The team may need to become intersectoral in order to address her transportation, income security, and childcare concerns. Like with any new model of care, change does not happen overnight. Small incremental changes can lead to larger practice changes and improvements. System change will occur over time as providers implement promising changes on a small scale to see how they will work and refine the changes as necessary before implementation on a broader scale.
So for the remainder of this session, and after this practice session at the end, we're going to talk about how we're going to build on the model for improvement and actually how the resources can support you as you go back to your practice setting in terms of implementing a change. And we're going to be thinking about this at that foundational level in terms of a small incremental change that would then be built on over time through engaging and further learning. So we won't actually have you discuss this question, but hopefully it's a model that you're familiar with and you can sort of put that practice improvement lens on the discussions that you're having in the remainder of the session. So I'll just finish off the video.
Hopefully you are starting to see how current challenges faced by the healthcare system can be mitigated through team-based approaches to care. It is important that team-based models of care are based on patient and community needs and should take into account the context of care and complexity of patient issues. Evidence shows that team-based care benefits patients, providers, and the system as a whole. Focusing on the competencies for collaborative practice will help providers implement small incremental changes that support models of team-based care and system transformation.
So what I'd like you to do now is just take 3 minutes at your tables to talk about three main points, or even just one main point, that emerged for you as you watched this video that really just provided some foundational knowledge. We do have flip charts posted around the room, and if you want to sort of post something to share with the rest of the groups, that would be absolutely fantastic, so we can start to sort of collect what people are thinking about and what's standing out for them with regards to team-based care. And then we'll ask a couple of you just to sort of share your thoughts before we move on. So just 3 minutes at your table to talk about the key points and messages that emerged for you. Okay, I hear a little bit of a lull in the room. Or not? So I'm wondering at this sort of high level overview in terms of team-based care, what's sort of starting to stand out or stick with you at this point? Can we get a couple of summaries from tables? Yep.
I can yell. The money ran out.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a big problem that we got from the evidence. I know that the evidence wasn't there for it, but that's what we got.
Right.
The second was, how do we get commonality of practice across the different practitioners? Do we wing it for each new situation? Like a two-year-old with COPD and crisis, you know, how do we care for that? And what is the overhead for coordination and getting commonality on a continuing basis? And the third question was, how do we get funding? And the fourth question was, how do we get funding? You want the fifth question?
So it sounds like what's emerging for you is a lot of questions, which is understandable. And our real hope is that as you start to engage in these small group discussions, that you start to learn from each other. There are no answers to the funding question at this point, but there's some very creative solutions that hopefully will start to come out as we have conversations about different practices and solutions that have been implemented. So that's the objective of this session. And I imagine that we're all going to leave with more questions than answers, but sometimes that's a good thing. Yes.
Whenever, and just speaking objectively from using the film to introduce team-based care competencies, I always like to start with the why. And it strikes me that if we started with that patient story, and if you get a chance to watch a YouTube video on Lorelei Lingard about collective competence, she starts with the story of Joe to explain why of team-based care and collective competence. And it's very compelling start to then go into the hows. Mm-hmm. And the other piece is team-based care is sort of this nebulous, like, okay, it's working together in a team. I know a team, I played on one I still play on one. And the way that Lingard describes team-based care as collective competence versus our own individual competence is very non-threatening. As a physician, nobody's questioning my knowledge. However, I understand that I don't work in the collective, and being competent in the collective is a different thing. Mm-hmm. And it fits so nicely in with the team-based care concept in there. Well worth watching the video and well worth seeing how she then gets the audience on side as part of a presentation to explain the why.
Great, thank you. And I think, you know, that really, that the point to that is I think the why is always our patients, right? So the more that we can keep that lens throughout the conversations in terms of our patients being the why, it's really helpful. Yeah. Oh. Run, Jenny, run.
So I guess we were wondering, where is the funding? And and also, I'm wondering about the timeline for this. And I think if you roll it out to these are the converted here, and mm-hmm. if we roll it out to the community docs, they're going to ask us, where is the funding? And it's not good enough for us just to talk amongst ourselves and find creative ways. I think it has to be, this is how you get the funding, this is how you get the funding, and then you do this. And I think that has to be coordinated with GPSC.
Yeah, I think we're very fortunate today, as well as ongoing. There are talks happening at the strategic level around the funding, and I think, you know, then there's sessions like this that are really focused on the education piece, and that sort of the solutions happen from multiple levels. And one is as we start to look at ways that we can learn about team-based care and look at what the models could potentially be. Hopefully will inform those funding model discussions as well.
So the surprising thing might be that the hardest part about the funding is not for the teams, but for, or the allied health components of the team, but to the physician. So from the North perspective, trying to do this across the entire health authority, very clear that you can't just start adding a physio, add a public health nurse or a nurse, a practice nurse and a social worker and a mental health and all that stuff. So you have to draw them from where they already are, just redeploy into a different way. So the idea was that without a complete system transformation, it wouldn't be affordable, sustainable, and it wouldn't even be logical, because then you're just ending up with duplication. So that precipitated a Section 54 to all the allied health staff in the North. They were all essentially fired. That was kind of interesting. excuse me, sorry. When the TB clears up, I'll probably talk better. if you shook my hand today, you're dead. You're doomed. So this redeployment thing is all great, and it's actually moving along sometimes too slow for some of us and pretty good for others. But the doc, as we were just discussing here at the table, is stuck with a fee-for-service world where you have to lay hands and eyes on everybody, and it's hard to delegate tasks and to supervise and to work within the current system. So if nirvana happens and you suddenly find yourself in a team, but you find yourself in a team being paid under fee-for-service, it gets complicated. Whereas with a population-based funding approach, then it's suddenly, oh, great, I get to do, I take the money that I've already fairly been allocated for my practice, and I can do the work more efficiently, and it's all good.
So as I mentioned, this is a foundational session, and I think that in some of the future sessions, we do start to talk a little bit more in detail about this concept of a network. And so from my sort of perspective, there's so many ways that we can be working together outside of the constraints of funding models that do allow us to kind of start to move this train forward in terms of operating as a team and being more integrated in the care that we provide. And so we sort of started to look at those concepts, and hopefully some of those will come out in the conversations today, and people are already operating in kind of those networks or, you know, sort of very flexible teams. Yeah.
Just another comment. You know, I appreciate that people go into the funding and start looking at how they're bringing in outsiders into the practice. I would challenge people to look very carefully inside your own practice and ask yourself whether or not you're working as a team with your office staff first. And work on the competencies within your own practice. And I think we miss that the MOA, the billing clerk, and those other people that are in your practice are people that you need to learn to work with as foundational to the team before we start bringing in pharmacists and social workers. And some practices may be ready for that, and many not. And it's about learning to speak a language, learning how to work together side by side, and changing from being prescriptive in the way that we problem solve to being working with patients to find out what their own goals are and to work forward, and leave the problem solving to those difficult diagnostic dilemmas that Paul had said this morning where our responsibility is.
Great, thank you. And I'm going to use that as an opportunity to segue. Thank you very much for that. What I'd like us to start doing is really thinking about your own practice and where you fit along that continuum. So are you thinking about team-based care, and why is that? I think that why, starting with why, is a really important piece. So why are you considering team-based care? If you are already practicing in a team, what does that look like for you? Is it your MOA? Is there a team you're already working with? And what took you on that journey and what started that team-based approach to care for you? And then what might it look like in your practice if you're not already doing it? Or if you're already practicing as a team, what does that look like for you specifically? And then what aspects of your patient population are you supporting through that team, or could you support better through a team-based model of care? So we're going to start by, we'll see how the volume in the room goes and how the conversations go, but we'll start by giving you 10 minutes to just start to have those conversations that start really relating this to your own practice and where you fit along that continuum in terms of team-based practices. And again, there are flip charts around the room if people want to sort of draw that in a very creative way or just write a few things down to share.
Yeah. So I just before we have the conversation, how many here are already, because I heard when we had the panel up here that a lot of people are currently working in a team. How many here actually are working in a team-based care model? Okay, so almost half. And so I think we need to flip these questions to when you started or what drove you to develop a team-based care, to consider a team-based care. So if you're in the position of already working in a team-based care model, what made you do that shift? What drove you to do that? And that might be answered by what aspects of care did you think needed perhaps some assistance with or wanted to expand your team to support? and then share at your table. Perhaps there's half with a team and half without a team, or share your team-based care models that exist. So I think because we have so many that are actually currently practicing in that model, perhaps it's a retrospectoscope of, well, what actually made me consider this? What patient population, what needs were met by doing this? Does that seem okay? Okay.
Okay, I'll just get you to come back to the large room. Hopefully you're having some good discussions. I wonder if there's any group that would be willing to share what practice or patient population is or could be supported by team-based care based on the discussions that you just had, and what this does or could look like, depending on whether you're already doing it or thinking about it. Is there anybody willing to share a little bit about your discussions at your small tables, just so we can learn across the broader group? Yeah. I think we've got a microphone coming your way.
It's okay.
Hello. We've had a team-based practice in Maple Ridge now for 40 years. We've had a nurse working there, and we use our MOAs, and we have a really close relationship with our home health people. And it's made our life a lot easier. But you have to find the right people. And it's hard. Like, we can't pay a nurse $50 an hour like she'd make in a hospital. We have to pay her, like, $35 an hour. So we have to find nurses that are willing, so that they don't have to do night shifts and weekends, so that they can come and work for us. So it's hard to find those key people, but you can do it if you're willing to look for them and if you're willing to take some knock in your income. The biggest knock for most of us is finding room for those other people. You know, most doctors have space issues, right? They overhead is expensive, so you don't have empty rooms sitting around with nobody in them. You have two examining rooms if you're lucky. Now, to give one up to a psychologist or dietitian or anybody else is expensive. So back again, funding. Somebody has to help you fund that thing.
What did you do to address your space issues? Sounds like you found the right people.
We built a new building and we put enough rooms in it. We were lucky.
Okay then.
Do that. But then we did that 25 years ago when you could build a building and it wasn't that expensive. So now to do it now, I don't see how we would possibly do it. In psychiatry, in mental health care, we could easily bring, like, we have a nurse, an RN that does all that kind of wound care and everything else. But we could easily bring a psych nurse in there to do counseling and stuff. But we'd have to shadow bill that. I mean, that's just, to get a good counselor, you got to pay them at least $45-$50 an hour. So we would have to shadow bill and generate that income before we could possibly do that. And I don't know what the position of the MSP is on that.
Especially with the double dipping concept that just came forwards in the papers. But I have heard of strategies with respect to group visits. Again, a space issue, right? It's using your waiting room. So having a closed waiting room for a period of time where you have a group visit because that's the only space you have enough, and then the opportunity to quote shadow bill is actually, you're actually billing, but that counseling's going on at the same time with those groups as you take individuals one at a time. Strategic.
I think the biggest thing, though, with having a team-based care, one doctor can't do it. Like, you can't have an office that you have one or two doctors. It's not going to work. You have to have a minimum, I think, of five doctors in the group, and maybe seven would even be better. But for just two, three people, they can't afford that, those other team members.
Yeah, and doing the research for this curriculum, we found some interesting models in terms of if you're, you know, there's some great, you know, team-based, you know, multiple practices where people are able to bring in other team members, and then there's groups that have done it across solo practices and shared resources that way, if they're not already working in sort of a GP group practice.
Right, so you'd have a virtual network or whatever instead of having a physical one.
Yeah, and so that concept of being able to sort of share across practices so that you have that capacity.
It'd be interesting to look at it from a traveling doctor So we talk about allied health coming into our practices and sharing it between, you know, for example, a social worker between four different clinics. It would be interesting to think of community health clinics with allied health as the basis, and then the family physician actually coming in and serving a purpose in that particular clinic. So flipping the concept, right?
Services. I'm a family doctor there. We have a pretty awesome team, if I do say so. I'm on an alternative payment system. So funding, I hear you. And part of me, because even though we're on alternative payment, we shadow bill fee for service. And so we do have pressures to see the numbers that that are in primary care as well. And I just have to say to this room, because I know you all know it, that our funding for primary mental health care is the pits in this province. It is not time-based. There's no, nothing beyond 20 minutes four times a year unless you have an Access 1 diagnosis. And I think a lot of our patients probably have Access 2 stuff going on as well. That's more interfering. But anyhow, I'm not going to get onto my bandwagon for that. So, for the team that we've developed at UVic, what we noticed was that we had one psychiatrist FTE for our population of 20,000 with five FTE family physicians. And we're handling a lot of the mental health care need, but we still were referring on. And the wait to see the psychiatrist was 2 months, which in the community is great, but in university, that's a whole term. And so the psychiatrist had a look at our data and decided that we could probably do joint visits where we're addressing a specific question in the joint visit as opposed to doing a full consultation with all the people on the wait list. And so we developed a collaborative care model of assessing and managing our patients. And that was an SCC, so Specialist Services Committee, SSC initiative. And there was some funding through that to have a mental health nurse care collaborator, care coordinator, as well as a CBT coach through that. And we reduced the wait time to see psychiatry for full consult down to 3 weeks, I think, and to see the psychiatrist for that specific visit to 10 days. So we were able to do that, see more people over the course of 3 years and feel more competent and be brought up and know that those people were being taken care of and transitioned between hospital if they needed it and back to the community. So that's been great. But again, the funding thing, where does it go after the SSC grant runs out in August, which is upcoming? The other thing that I've done to support mental health care in the community is group visits for cognitive behavioral skills training. So I take referrals, a group of us take referrals from the whole community. And so group visits are a creative way of providing mental health care services, but it doesn't get away from that assessment need that people have.
Thank you for sharing those. Those are great, innovative ideas. Does anybody else want to share what the discussion from their table or any creative ideas?
Any patient populations? I've heard a lot around mental health. Mm-hmm. Actually heard wound care over there just a minute ago, which is another one that I think is key in our time-consuming in our practice and could probably be better done by somebody other than me. Any other patient populations that teams have developed around or...
But we also need buy-in from the allied health professionals. When I'm looking at it from an asset base, we've got all these people, well, hopefully some of them at least, working in our communities and trying, not only on our part, but trying to motivate them to see the benefit of this so that the people that are working in their own little silos, which is what we're all accustomed to, start to look at the fact that maybe we could really provide better care for our patients if we did work together as a team. So rather than thinking we always need new funding for something, why don't we just get the people that are already being paid by their own funding systems to work better together?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's a great point, and I think that's probably going to lead us into our next discussion, and is really key when we're talking about how do we build team-based care, is how do we engage these other professions? So how do we start by looking at a particular looking at our patient panels and identifying a specific patient population who would benefit from a team-based care to approach, a team-based approach to care? How do we then look at who else should be involved and who's available, what are those resources already there, and how do we then build those relationships and start to collaborate with them and start to build a team together, all being committed to that specific patient, so that we can work together more effectively. And as you mentioned, you know, they're already being paid throughout their own funding model, so it becomes more about the communication processes that we put in place, really understanding what those other professions do and when and is appropriate to be collaborating with them and working with them to set up processes that'll help us sort of build that team approach. And so we've got sort of some questions that maybe we'll start to look at. There we go. That'll help us start thinking about that. And so I'll pass things over to Christy.
All of these questions are in the foundations module for team-based care. And when you're working in the small groups of the foundations modules, the idea is we'll be taking time and going through these particular questions. And there's a recognition as we built the foundations module that some of you will still be at the thinking about your patient population and how you might better address some of their needs, trying to figure out what exactly the patient, your patient population needs are. And then some of you will also will start to be at, well, I've got this patient population that has this need, so I have a predominance of musculoskeletal problems in my practice. And so what are the other professions that might be able to help me? I have a bunch of elderly patients on a lot of medications, perhaps, different types of populations. And so once we start to look at our populations, you may be starting to look at, well, who might help with those patients? And then thinking about, as we were asking our panelists earlier, about how do you negotiate roles and responsibilities? How do you set up your lines of communication, thinking about privacy, thinking about access or delegation to EMRs, thinking about urgent storytelling? Because if we think about the traditional family practice model, we are the keepers of the story. And so we get to know our patients, and when you're starting to share care with others, conversations that one care provider aren't with the whole team. And so how do you share that important information about care plans and goals of care, which may change, which we know do change? Keep going through. Some people have some aha moments that actually their MOA and their receptionist are parts of the team. And so many of us are actually functioning as a team and not optimizing the work of our team that we're currently functioning with. Recognizing that my receptionist, for example, will tap me on the shoulder before I'm going in to see a patient and say, you know, they looked kind of down when they came in today, or they were kind of confused about the time or whatever. You know, there are little messages that actually is really important for us to know and can flag us. So they're parts of our team and working together and optimizing how we do that. And then the last part is some of you who are functioning in a team, have you considered quality improvement? So thinking about, could we be doing something better as a team? So, but we're not going to look at all of them today. We are going to look at those three. There we go. We put in three slides for one. So those three questions. So what other professions are involved in the care of your patients? Because we know that about half of you are currently involved in team-based care. Currently thinking, and we asked this to our panel, if in an ideal world we got a new government who put tons of money towards team-based care and a flexible model, what other profession would you consider in expanding your team? And then what are some of the things that you do to make your collaboration efficiency? So negotiating roles, communication strategies, that kind of thing. Do you see yourself as a team, and what would it take to feel like a team for those of you who may be just working with your MOA or a receptionist, or for those of you who actually have a network? Have you considered yourself a team, for example, with your community pharmacist? So just a short discussion at your table, guiding questions or other conversations that you want to have. That's okay too, and we'll bring it back in a few minutes. Okay. I'm gonna bring people together. So instead of debriefing table by table or asking people to volunteer what their table discussion was, I'm going to highlight a couple things that I hope your table got to or noticed with this one. One is that this was to draw out the fact that even without a set sort of grant funding model opportunity through the division, we are actually collaborating with health professionals to take care of our patients outside of. We naturally do that. We have networks of healthcare providers. And so starting to think of them as a team, or us as part of a team with these networks of healthcare providers that are supporting us in the care of our patients, I think is key. And so I'm hoping that your conversations might have picked up a little bit about that. And I'm going to actually go on to a case that will draw that out, I hope, a little bit further. So this is Bob. He's a 75-year-old. He presented to the emergency department with pneumonia. He had his first MI when he was 58. He has a history of diabetes and heart failure. He's on multiple medications. He lives alone in a smaller community, and he's currently is currently visiting family who live in the city. He was treated in the hospital with IV antibiotics for his pneumonia. He was noted to have impaired renal function, and therefore one of his heart failure medications was stopped in the hospital. A discharge was done, and the discharge plan and instructions were given to Bob, and he went home. Bob made an appointment on returning home with his family doctor, and the family practice office used advanced access next day appointment. So that was all good. He was restarted on all of his medications. And that was because Bob would not been clear about all of his discharge instructions. When he saw the family doctor, there was no discharge summary or labs available. And so the family doctor relied on Bob telling his story of his hospitalization and omitted the renal issues. As well, he forgot to bring in the little piece of paper that he'd been given on discharge that had the instructions on it. there was no connection for the provincial viewer in the community family doctor's office, so we couldn't see the hospital records and or the discharge summary or the medication changes or the lab work. Bob's pneumonia is better, but his diabetes had not been in good control. And you got that based on Bob's own record of his blood sugars. The family doc therefore ordered a new A1C, as it hadn't been done recently, and he hadn't received the results, as said, from the hospital. He was referred to an internal medicine specialist, because that was local. In the community, they didn't have an endocrinologist. And so Bob had seen this internal medicine specialist before on a prior admission when things had gone out of whack. He had a specialist visit the week later. There was no discharge summary sent from the family doc's office because it wasn't available at the time. They still hadn't received it. There was a concern about the diabetes. And however, they only had the last labs, which were some time before. Started on a new oral hypoglycemic, and then the patient went to the pharmacy on his way home. The pharmacist reviewed the medications, reviewed with Bob his medications, but the pharmacist did note that Bob was having trouble remembering his medications, which ones to take when. So the pharmacist bubble packed the medications. I'm going to stop reading this now. But does this sound familiar? Like, can most of us relate to this story? Hands up. How many have we had a problem with this type of thing? It goes on to talk about the community care nurse getting involved and going to visit Bob, but not having any communication from the pharmacist or the specialist. Or the family doc. So we can relate. Do you think there are ways that we, without a funding model, could figure some of these things out, though? That's a challenging question. Thanks, Bruce.
If you watch Lorelei Lingard's video, this is built on her video from the TED Talk, although it's Meet Joe. That's not criticizing. That was something that I developed this. The key here is that, back to my previous point, it's about communication. It doesn't mean having somebody in practice, and it's about being able to have the right things in place. Yeah, sure, I mean, some people decide in the Lower Mainland that they're not gonna get hospital labs. In Powell River, we get every hospital lab from our hospital. We've had a big discussion with that about between Lower Mainland and rural, you know, what we take on. Having this clinical information would be useful. Being able to have a discharge summary. That stuff's systemic stuff that's happening, that they're working on electronic document distribution and getting discharge summaries and getting notifications. The key, though, is that communication piece between the pharmacist, the home and community care worker, just takes a phone call or a fax until we have the right stuff. And, you know, I think, as I was talking here, that the key is that we don't need a lot of money to do some of the foundational things. We need to change our approach of being siloed in our care. And I don't know if you're going to go on with the story. Are you going to go on with the story? Because what happens after there's individually very competent people taking care of every single step of his care is that 3 days later, after he starts his medication, he ends up in hospital with low blood sugar, renal failure, and low volume in his system. because everybody did their job without talking to each other. And that's the idea between collectively being incompetent from Bob's viewpoint and individually being very competent and very caring from the individual's viewpoint, which is really kind of a neat way of looking at things. It's not like we're doing anything wrong in our care of the patient. It's as a group together, we can do better from the patient's perspective.
Thanks, Bruce. It reminds me of the case that we used in the video regarding the sprained ankle. And if I think of how I would care for all three of those patients as a family physician, a sprained ankle is a sprained ankle is a sprained ankle. But we recognize that the first patient who's a recreational runner without a lot of people dependent on them, to the single mom on the third floor with the two young kids, blah, blah, blah. You know, my job actually as a family physician doesn't change, but I need to engage a bunch of other healthcare providers and collectively provide the care for that third patient. So that also makes me think of that as the individual competence in what we do, and then that shared broader collective competence. Go ahead.
This case here is just so classical. Every physician gets this at least once a week, and it's just starting in with doctor-doctor communication. It's just a lack of respect for each other, physician to physician. How can that hospitalist think that that care is going to be anything but substandard if he doesn't send a discharge summary? Now, he may have done a discharge summary, but it wasn't typed, or it wasn't faxed, or it wasn't mailed. So somebody made a huge mistake here. Either the hospitalist didn't do the discharge summary, or the hospital didn't get it completed. So you have to find out where that's happening. And it's sometimes both. And secondly, here you got team members, and they're not communicating very well. And that's the risk of getting more team members on your team. You got more things for the family doctor to organize. Now suddenly you've got to remember what not only the hospitalist has done for your patient, but what your nurse practitioner has done for your patient, and what your dietitian has said to your patient, and what your, you know, everybody said to your patient. So still that doctor's got to be responsible. And it can get pretty trying.
It can be, for sure. But it's interesting. So there's no, as I say, there's no application there for a team-based care model, right? It's looking at the processes that we currently work in and how can we make them better. And if we're working in a community it's reaching out. And, you know, it may be taking that time to actually figure out who the pharmacist is. Like if you have, I know at UBC where I practice, there are two pharmacies. There's a Shoppers Drug Mart and there's a Village pharmacist. And at least I know the names of the pharmacists who work in those two, and I can call them up. And I do get the faxes that interrupt my day, but I also have that opportunity to communicate with them and have made that kind of reach out to figure out and improve the fact that Mrs. Smith may need a bubble pack. And thank you for letting me know. And then that lets me know that I need to assess her cognitive status, you know, and how she's doing at the next visit too. So having those conversations even doesn't need a funding model, just needs to have those conversations. Where'd the mic go? There it is, Bill.
Yeah, you know, to me, this is the transition of care problem, and it's the one that makes us the bronze medalists in killing people. We're the medical profession is the third leading cause of death in the U.S., and most of it is because of this lack of information and transitions of care, people falling off the cracks. And so the number of different strategies, you know, virtual care, we keep, and I'm guilty of this as much as anybody, trying to get off that telehealth thing, because telehealth is always associated with those rooms in a hospital that you follow the yellow strip and then you have to phone a bridge and all this stuff. But actually, virtual care is when humans aren't involved. It is virtually care. And so Project RED, re-engineering the hospital discharge, is a project where they had a caricature called Louise. And Louise gave an organized discharge plan instructions to the patient that they could replay over and over again. It was all very prescriptive on how this all played out. The patients loved Louise far more than a nurse. They loved the nurse far more than the doctor. The doctor was way down on terms of, you know, sharing the information because it's too random and not clear, right? So we, so there's these kind of strategies that come up, but front-end voice recognition to me seems like it's going to be hopefully the answer. I don't know if you, any of your health authorities have front-end voice recognition by radiologists, but it's transformed stuff where the now the radiology reports are being electronically delivered into your inbox in 30 minutes, usually for to an hour from the time the film was done, because it's there's no typing delay, it's all immediate, and the radiologist can text somebody when they have a concern about what they've just saw, and make, and if they don't get a response, then they follow up with a phone call. So we had, I think we have to do this all throughout the system for every transition of care from the point of view of specialist, you know, referring to a specialist, a referral sending somebody back. If there's something significant, like you've changed the meds because they can go into renal failure, I think it's just crazy that we accept that. And mm-hmm. and the stats are there for us to show that we are crazy.
Ernie.
Thank you. The very existence of the term transitions in care implies that there is something to transition from and something to transition to, and that would be silos. So as long as people feel that they have a boundary and that the patient is the one that crosses a boundary instead of their care, then we're going to have all these problems. What we need is to have little tunnels through the silos in which the doctors can actually travel freely. And if you get the metaphor, right? Mm-hmm. And that would be a way in which you can actually say, as people with responsibilities, that our care doesn't stop when the patient leaves my office or my boundary. It stops when I know that it's gone on to the next one. Now, we don't have attitudes like that, but you asked, what is the attitude under which you know that you have a team-based care? I think that's the attitude where you feel that you are together responsible rather than one is responsible for my part of it. That idea of my part of it is the killer. Thank
you. Okay. Do you want to do? Okay.
Okay. We're coming to the end of our time together. There we go. So what I would challenge you to do is think about what differences team-based care would make to your practice, what models resonated most for you. Hopefully you've been learning from your colleagues, and we had our wonderful panelists share some models of team-based care. And then what steps do you need to take to bring team-based care into your practice? So you're already practicing for a team as a team. What can you do to improve that practice? And so we actually have a whiteboard in the lobby. You may have seen it. And we challenge you to write down your thoughts on a sticky note. You'll notice that there are also comments from the other team-based care sessions. So just think about those questions and hopefully share some of that with your colleagues through that whiteboard. Just leave that there for a second.
I was going to say also, or Ernie's challenge of how we create those tunnels that we transition and not have silos, that we somehow break down and have that not only collective competence, but collective responsibility or accountability for that patient.
So the question is, how do you build your tunnel?
How do you build your tunnel?
How do you build your tunnel? Okay.
Through your silo.
And so then we have some options for moving forward. So the first team-based care session on which this session was based is going to be available this summer as part of the PSP small group learning, as well as the BCCFP Resiliency Education and Learning Groups. And then there's going to be each of those other eight sessions that I talked to you about, they're going to be rolled out over the coming year. And whether you choose the PSP small group learning sessions or the BCCFP real groups, you are eligible for support from an RST or peer mentor. And so there are tools that are available to help you determine the kinds of team-based care that might be appropriate for your practice. And that, so you might want to try the GPSC patient medical home assessment tool. And the URL for that is just on the bottom there. I'm going to pause while somebody takes a picture of that. Or you all write that down? Yes. A REAL group is a real resiliency education and learning group. Those are hosted by the BC College of Family Physicians. And so the BC College matches our members who request it with physicians in their area who then participate in small group learning sessions. So they schedule them themselves at times that work for them, but we can match them with a group, or some of our groups are physicians who work together or already know each other. There's resources provided by the BC College of Family Physicians to support those group discussions that tend to be very member-led, and members bring the sort of topics of interest to them or clinical cases or challenges that they're having. Resiliency is a real focus for those groups. And then the team-based care sessions that the PSP is using have been modified to fit within that real group setting. So one of the topics that those real groups can address is team-based care.
So the real groups were designed with two things in mind: the McMaster small group learning sessions, which you're all aware of, which are very clinically focused, and a Balint group. Have you heard of a Balint group, where you go and you talk about the issues that are really... So we tried to combine those two concepts to support physician practice resilience. We've started to generate, and this is the BC College, generate some content that you can discuss in small groups. So you have a selection of topics, and team-based care is one of the selection of topics. But there are others, and they're all aimed or geared. The whole point is actually really to get, we recognize from the McMaster modules that there are additional benefits to coming together than just the clinical knowledge and discussing the case. There are other benefits of bringing these groups of physicians in a community together, and so we were really trying to harness that and support physicians in developing their own small groups or communities of practice. And so that's what the real groups are.
Okay, and then the last thing is that on your tables you have a copy of the integrated learning package for this education session. So you may find it useful to go back to your practice and work through these activities with people that you collaborate with or your other team members. And the practice support program can actually provide you with up to 2 hours of compensation for your time and your team members' time in working through this learning package. So it's a great way to cement what you've learned today and facilitate discussion with your team. So hopefully we've started some interesting conversations that you can, in fact, take back to your team. So if you're interested in signing up for any of the team-based care learning sessions, you can contact the people on this slide. So we have Aaron from the PSP, and we have Ian from Real Groups, and then my contact information's up there if you're interested in anything else related to team-based care. We do focus on that a lot at UBC in our office. And we just want to thank you for attending today's session and for your engagement. It's been absolutely fantastic to hear what everybody's doing and where everybody's at with regard to team-based care and some of your challenges, but mostly really hearing about what's going on and what are some of the amazing, innovative solutions that people have. So we want to wish you luck as you build your teams and support you and your patients through learning sessions like this. So thank you very much for your time, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the summit.